the more boundaries actually that you set in your life, ensure that you actually need less armor to walk through life with, because you have named your boundary and you've asserted it. And I find that in my own experience, when I haven't been very good about setting boundaries, I'm actually walking around with more tension, with more tightness. I'm not as open because there's more permeability and I'm not asserting what works for me and what doesn't work for me.
That was Carly Houck, and you're listening to episode 199 of the Building Psychological Strength podcast, where we uncover the information, tools, and techniques to turn our mind into our most valuable asset.
The courage to face fears with persistence.
Being able to be present enough in this moment to choose my response thoughtfully.
We have the strength to bend to life stressors, to bend to adversity without snapping, without breaking.
There are only six things that contribute to our quality of life, and they are all experiences.
In every moment, we are deciding who we want to be and how we want to live our lives.
Noticing what your brain is doing and then being able to make choices.
Mobilize the things that we know lift us up.
Welcome back to the Building Psychological Strength podcast. My name is April and I'm your host. Let's take just a moment and ground ourselves in the situation that many of us are in right now. We are months into the pandemic. Many of us are juggling so many different competing responsibilities, right? Between work and home and kids and school and all of the other responsibilities that life brings, we're finding ourselves in this situation where the lines in between those different responsibilities are becoming more and more blurry. As we're working from home, maybe kids are distance learning, we're shifting roles multiple times throughout the day, and this blurriness can make it really difficult to do some of the basic things that we all do to just maintain a little bit of sanity in our day, to do some compartmentalization of our responsibilities and feel like we can focus on one thing at a time. It's becoming increasingly difficult to do that. And because of that, I wanted to tackle a topic that I know is critical in helping us move through times like these when it feels like the lines between everything are blurring. Important topic, but not necessarily an easy one to put into practice. And that is the topic of setting boundaries. Today, we are speaking with a woman named Carly Houck. Carly is a learning architect. She's a leadership and development consultant, an author, a speaker, and she is an adjunct faculty member at Stanford University and UC Berkeley Haas School of Business. And she teaches on the subject of leadership and business as a platform for positive change in the world. Specifically, Carly's extremely knowledgeable in the realm of emotional intelligence. And specifically, even more than that, the link between emotional intelligence and our ability to set something that she calls compassionate boundaries. Now, it's interesting because depending upon your social roles in society, it can be more and less socially acceptable for you to feel and express different emotions. For some people, men in our culture, it is not as socially acceptable to feel and express sadness, for example. For women, it is not as socially acceptable to feel and express anger, for example. But we get into this interesting conversation with Carly today about how critically important it is for us to tap into our own emotions, to acknowledge the actual emotion that we're feeling, in order to determine, okay, here's how I'm feeling. What does that mean that I need? Or what does that signal in terms of which action I should take going forward? So we talk about emotional intelligence from that perspective, but then we get into a beautiful conversation about setting compassionate boundaries. Now, compassionate boundaries are ones that they're a boundary, right? They get us the space and the protection that we need, but they do so in a way that preserves the relationship with the other person. And isn't that the whole thing? Isn't that why boundaries can be so difficult to set? Because we worry about harming relationships. So I love this perspective of compassionate boundaries. And we kind of tie these two topics together between emotional intelligence and compassionate boundaries, because we actually need to tap in to specific emotions, anger being one of them, in order to be able to set a firm boundary. This is such a nuanced and deep conversation. I'm so excited for you all to hear this, especially in the time that we're in now. I mentioned it before, but the blurring of the lines between all of these aspects of our lives can make it feel like we don't have really any boundaries for us to rely on and to protect us. And as you know, if you've listened to prior episodes of ours, if you're the type of person who is shouldering all of this responsibility, it means you are an asset who needs to be protected. You are a linchpin in this process of life that needs to be protected in order to continue to perform and show up in the way that you want to. So this conversation is an absolutely valuable one for you to listen to. Also, listen until the end. One of the last things that Carly walks us through is sort of a systematic way of approaching setting these boundaries that makes it feel less intimidating and less scary. So I really want you to make sure that you catch that. All right. I really hope, no matter where you're at in your own personal situation, I really hope that this episode helps you think about how you can do some things to protect yourself, how you can recognize when there is a need that you have, and use the information from this episode to set some boundaries that not only protect you, but also enhance the relationship that you have with that other person. All right, let's dive into our interview with Carly Houck. Carly, I'm so excited to have you on this episode because the context that many of us are finding ourselves in these days really lends itself to a lot of the work that you do and a lot of the expertise that you have. I really think this is going to be an episode that people can take away some value and start to apply to their life directly. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
I want to dive right into the deep end of the pool. You know, if we kind of start with some laying of the land or some context setting, we are all in, maybe individually we're in unique circumstances, but there is a shared circumstance that we all find ourselves in, and that is just the complexity, the adversity, the uncertainty of everything that continues to happen with the COVID epidemic. And it seems like, to me at least, as soon as I feel like I've gotten some stability, I feel like, okay, I think I've got a handle on this, the ground starts to move again under my feet, and I find myself in a situation where I'm faced with something new or a different challenge than I had before. And as we were chatting before we hopped on to record, you had a really beautiful way of describing emotionally how we all might be feeling during this time as we cope with whatever individual uncertainty is coming our way. Can we start there? And can I have you kind of ground us in that explanation that you gave? Because it was so clear and so beautiful.
Yes, be happy to. Thank you. Well, so if we go, you know, a little bit into the science here, we as human beings really don't like change. Some people say they do, but you know, all change creates a certain level of discomfort and stress because we're having to adapt to something new. And from my background in neuroscience and really understanding how the mind, body, and heart work, when there is a change or a shift, our typical first response, our first feeling is going to be fear. Uh-oh, what's going on? Can I handle this? This is unfamiliar. And so that fear response can actually move us into a fight, flight, or freeze response, or what has been found in research through UCLA and Shelley Taylor's research, we could also move into tend and befriend. But that has to usually be trained. And so by just noting, okay, fear is going to be our first primary emotion, if we don't acknowledge that and we don't learn how to kind of cope and soothe with that in a way that can help us to emotionally regulate, come back into balance, we're in this just kind of overdrive of survival mode and fear. And many of us are in this situation right now. Like, what is it? There's a statistic of over 40 million Americans are out of work right now. Mm-hmm. That puts us right in survival mode. You know, our basic needs, when we think of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, that's the basic need. You know, do we have kind of our physiological, financial needs met? That's not even going into like our needs for belonging and safety. But a lot of people are in that more primary level. And so that's creating a lot more emotions that we're having to navigate. And so you had mentioned you're noticing once you feel like you have stability, then everything changes again. And if you don't have that inner strength, those inner resources and tools, it's really hard to navigate.
Yeah, absolutely. And something that I've noticed as well is that prior to the epidemic reaching the US, you know, we were used to having the conversation about the chronic stress that many of us find ourselves in, right? We're mm-hmm. stretched thin at work, we're stretched thin with family responsibilities and obligations. And if there is, and this has two sides of the coin, there's a good and there's a bad to this, but if there's one thing that people can do, people are incredibly good at adapting. And by that, I mean, we acclimate to the situation that we're in to the point that we may not even recognize that some of those feelings are there, right? It's that whole analogy of the frog that's in the water and you slowly heat the water up to the point where the frog's acclimating as it goes and it doesn't realize that it's in boiling water anymore. We have been, prior to the epidemic, we were in this sort of chronic stress situation that has shifted now. It's a new stressor or a new set of stressors potentially. But I would encourage people who are listening to this who might be thinking, I don't feel fear. It's not fear. What we're incredibly good at doing is attempting to acclimate in a way that maybe it doesn't feel like fear, but maybe your temper is shorter. Maybe it's not fear, but maybe you're feeling boxed in. Maybe it doesn't feel like fear. Maybe it feels like you feel stuck or caged in some way. These negative emotions can come from our attempt to try to acclimate to the situation that we're in. But regardless, what I would echo from what you said is that the uncertainty of the situation, the stress of the situation, it begins to put pressure on us. And the result that we see is this emotion that can come out in ways that we maybe aren't used to, or maybe as we look back in retrospect, isn't necessarily the way that we would have wanted it to. The big thing is, I mean, it's a huge nod to people about everything that they're shouldering right now. It's so mm-hmm. much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and I like that you just kind of threw out these other terms, and I would call those flavors of fear. So you said overwhelmed, caged. What I've learned from teaching on emotional intelligence for years at Stanford and Haas Business School and with many leaders is that our primary emotion is fear when there is discomfort or challenge or an obstacle. I mean, a lot of us have been talking about COVID as like the fear epidemic not, you know, because there's so much unknown, there's so much uncertainty, so that creates fear. But what happens often is fear is the first response, whether we're aware of it or not, and then we will actually move into anger. And these are both related to our fight-flight response, flight being the fear, anger being the fight. And what usually is underneath the anger is sadness. That's the grief. Like, many of us are feeling a lot of grief still, if we've allowed ourselves to even access that, like grief of all the things that we used to enjoy that we're having to let go of during this time. You know, maybe people actually miss kind of going into the office, or they really wish their kids were out of their house and back in school, or they're really tired of spending so much time with their husband right now, or their significant other. You know, there's a loss of having these bigger gatherings that we're not able to have right now. And so I preface all of this because we're not robots, thank God. We are human beings, and that means we're emotional beings. And we have thousands of different feelings all throughout the day. They're changing with every situation. And so what I often showcase and teach and practice as much as I can in my own life, especially at this time, is when I notice that there is a feeling here, how do I find my center? How do I come back into presence? And that is coming back to my body. So just noticing, I feel a little overwhelmed right now, or I feel really impatient, or I'm feeling rage right now. You know, like the name it to tame it. This is called affect labeling, and it's actually been found by neuroscience that when we name what we're experiencing, it actually tames that emotion. It tames our response to it in the amygdala, which is a part of the brain in the limbic system. So what I'd love to leave your listeners with is, when you notice there's an emotion, you can name it, just acknowledge it. Hey, fear, how's it going? We've felt fear before, right? When we acknowledge it, then there's this ability to be with it better and not actually just sweep it under the rug, because what we've learned is that what we resist persists. So you can push fear, anger, sadness, you know, under your feet, under your armpit, wherever you want it to go, but it's going to live in your body, because that's where emotions hang out, until you allow yourself to feel it and let it pass and it releases. And that's how we come back into center. I'll actually just share really transparently. I got some unfortunate news on Tuesday. It was really disappointing. And I needed to be with that feeling for a while. It was disappointment. Then it turned into like rage and anger. I was really pissed off. And so I was sharing with you, April, I just came back from a road trip, and I was driving a lot yesterday. And I actually took 2 hours yesterday, because that's how big all of these emotions were, before I was going to be in the car for 7 hours to head back to my home in California. And I spent time in nature, and I swam in an alpine lake. Like, I just really moved all these emotions through my body. I let myself cry. I literally screamed into nature, because I could do that. Nobody was around. And I allowed myself to really feel it, release it. And once I came through that window and that cycle, I was able to shift my mindset and really come back into gratitude for what I do have. Come back into, okay, this happened. It sucks. And it's not what I wanted. What do I have control of? What's the next step forward? Who can help me, you know, to turn this around? And just expanding into what's the best possibility. But in the moment that I was still feeling all these emotions and overwhelm, I couldn't access that greater positive mindset. I needed to feel it to shift it, if that makes sense.
It makes total sense. And I think this is a great time to just grant some permission to folks who are listening, because it's a misconception about emotions and feelings that there are good ones and bad ones, right? That there are, and even to be even more specific, there are acceptable and unacceptable ones. So we look at things like envy, jealousy, anger. We look at things like that, resentment, as somehow they are unacceptable emotions for us to have. And it can be hard for people to sort of diagnose how they're feeling and really deconstruct those feelings into something really specific if they feel like by labeling that emotion as jealousy. I am jealous that my friend has access to that resource right now when I don't. That makes me jealous. And somehow we feel like that means there's something wrong with us because we're having this unacceptable feeling. And at this point, I love how you said, name it to tame it. And don't be afraid of naming it because it is not unacceptable. As a human being, we naturally will have the range of emotions. They are not unacceptable. They're just typically a natural response to the situation that you were in. Most people would feel that way if they were faced with the situation you're being faced with. So I want to give people permission to name those emotions, even if they're ones that you may want, you know, your knee-jerk reaction might be to feel ashamed because you're experiencing them. It's likely very normal and completely human of you that you feel that way.
Totally. And, you know, typically in our culture and in a lot of other cultures around the world, like when you think of more Eastern cultures, there's a lot of hiding of emotion and expression. It's not something that has really been promoted or encouraged or accepted. And when we even think about gender dynamics, and I've done a lot of research around this because of teaching to men and women and all people, even, you know, regardless of more boxed in gender normalities. But typically people that identify as a woman, usually in our culture, it's more encouraged to express sadness, but there's still quite a bias around women that express anger. You know, there is a lot of gender norms that say, you know, a woman that expresses anger is hostile, or I'm just going to use the word bitchy. And if a man expresses anger, he actually is seen as empowered, impassioned. The same thing with men. Men in our culture, they are seen usually as weak if they express fear or sadness. So we have these gender norms that we really need to dismantle and shift so that everybody, regardless of what gender they identify with, are allowed just to be human, which means we're going to have the full range of emotions.
Something I want to dive into there that I'm so glad you brought this up. If what Carly just said seems like, I don't know, I feel like I can be angry. I don't know. I feel like one thing I would encourage you to think about is the number of times either if it's, you know, women I'm speaking to or people who identify as a woman that I'm speaking to right now, the number of times that either you or another woman have mentioned, gosh, it's frustrating because I cry when I'm angry. Like your knee-jerk reaction is to cry rather than to get actually angry about the situation. Conversely, the number of times you've seen men or people who identify as men feel like lash out in a sad situation or a situation that might make them feel sadness. We have these sort of cross behaviors or experiences because we go, you know, initially begin at the emotion that is less acceptable for our gender and then move into a place that is more socially acceptable. You end up crying when it's actually anger that's underneath it, or being angry when it's actually sadness that's underneath it. The expression of it becomes more socially acceptable, and you tend to see that more often with people. You can, I've had a number of conversations with friends of mine who are women who have expressed, like, when I'm in a situation at work that makes me angry, I get tears in my eyes, and that's frustrating to me because I don't want to be crying at work. So I just wanted to throw that in there really quickly, just to give people some context of when you might have heard this or seen this happening in your life and why that disconnect might be there. Something that I would love to chat about right now. So we've talked a lot about the competing responsibilities and the emotional heaviness of the situation that we're in. And we on this podcast talk a lot about, you know, people who have a lot on their plate, people who are being pulled in a lot of different directions. Lots of times, the reason why you are that linchpin in your life and why you are being asked to take on those responsibilities is because people around you believe that you can do it. They believe that you're the type of person who is capable of handling it, which can be difficult if too much is put on your plate. But what that means is that you are an incredible asset to the people around you and to this functioning system that is life right now. And what that also means is, as an asset, principally, you need to be protected. We need to do some things that support you and allow you to continue to perform or show up in a way that you want to, because if you're not protected, it's really difficult to handle everything that's being put on your plate. And specifically where I'm going here is, you have incredible expertise in the realm of boundaries, and in particular, compassionate boundaries. Can you talk a little bit about what that means in this context?
Yes. Thank you for that introduction. The reason that I came up with the word compassionate boundaries, and I imagine someone probably used it before I did, but I've been identifying and using this term with clients and in the courses on leadership that I teach for a long time. And a compassionate boundary is really saying no, but in a way that's being compassionate to your needs, but also doing it in a way that is kind and direct to the other. Because sometimes we can set a boundary and say, no, not doing this, or however we want to articulate it, but we're not actually thinking about, is this actually caring for the other person and how I'm doing it and what I'm saying? And if we're doing it in a way that, again, is compassionate to myself, compassionate to the other, it's going to be better received. And that person will actually be able to honor our boundary better. Versus, like, let's think of, I don't know, this is the first one that's coming up for me. If the boundary was, I don't want to talk to you because you're really frustrating me, and you do that in such a way where you maybe don't actually even say it, you just, you know, stop conversation, or you don't email that person back, that can feel really abrupt and actually create harm and hurt for the other person and ultimately for you. So that was a boundary that that person just put up, right? That there was a walking away, there was a no contact. But there's a better way to do it that is saying, you know what, I need some space right now. I don't want to talk right now. I'm too overwhelmed. And I care for you. Can we talk in a week or tomorrow? You know, that's actually holding a compassionate boundary, which is a healthier way and is going to have more health in your relationship and in your relating.
I like that distinction. It goes back to something that my colleague Ashley says a lot. One thing to think about in the way that we approach a situation is, sometimes it can feel a little bit cathartic, right? To take the first road that you mentioned, like, I'm not going to talk to you right now and whatever. But is that the most helpful and effective way to deliver that message? And if it isn't, you're not ultimately going to get the outcome that you want and need anyway, even if it might in the moment feel a little bit cathartic. Thinking more intentionally about how you word and how you, I guess, surround that boundary and that request can make it so much more effective and helpful in getting you what you need. Because ultimately, that's one of the goals, right? It isn't, yes, a big part of this is making sure that we preserve that relationship with the other person, if that's, you know, one of the goals, but two, to protect you and make sure that you're getting the space you need, not getting the space you need and then having the added issue of worrying whether you handled the situation badly and whatever, like adding additional responsibility on top of it. Let's get you the space that you need so that you can have it with a clear mind, knowing that you put that boundary in place in a way that was really thoughtful and intentional. I love that distinction that you made.
Thank you. And you know what? I also feel like for those of us that are listening, some of us may not even know what boundaries are or how are we at setting boundaries, right? That's why we're having this conversation. Mm-hmm. And so it might actually just be helpful to just share a couple examples of what boundaries are. Could I do that?
I love that. Yes, I love that.
So boundaries are like skin. You know, sometimes we have boundaries around what is coming in to my physical space, right? Words, truth, emotional distance, geographical distance. These are all boundaries. And boundaries are what really define us. They define what is you and what is not you. And a boundary really shows us where you end and someone else begins. And so this comes back to knowing what your no's are and what your yeses are. And that gives you the opportunity to take personal responsibility, practice good self-care. And the more boundaries actually that you set in your life, ensure that you actually need less armor to walk through life with, because you have named your boundary and you've asserted it. And I find that in my own experience, when I haven't been very good about setting boundaries, I'm actually walking around with more tension, with more tightness. I'm not as open because there's more permeability and I'm not asserting what works for me and what doesn't work for me. And, you know, overall, I'd say women typically have a harder time. People that identify as a woman, in my experience, personally and professionally, have had a harder time accessing saying no, because we tend to be caregivers. We tend to be like really looking after the whole, the family, the community. And so there's a much more wide berth of responsibility. And because we're managing and taking care of so much, we may actually have forgotten what our yes and our no is. And when we go back to the conversation we had earlier around our ability as people that identify as women to express no, no is actually associated with the feeling of anger. And so if we're not able to express or get in touch or give ourselves permission to feel angry, we're going to have a harder time setting boundaries.
That is really an important distinction to make, and it's really profound, given, you know, circling back to the conversation we had before, where sometimes, you know, we as women might feel like being angry is an unacceptable emotion. It's actually necessary in order to set and keep a boundary, and boundaries are a necessary, I would argue, component to self-care, a larger self-care practice. That is more than bubble baths and manicures. That's not what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about the intentional practices that we set up in our lives to support us to show up and perform our lives at our best in the way that we want to. That to me is what a self-care practice truly does. And boundaries are an important part of that.
Totally.
Something else that I think is really important to note as well, you know, we've talked a bit about this caregiving role. Really, when I look at, you know, people who are functioning as that asset in their life. They're juggling a lot of different things. And this goes for anybody. I don't want to keep saying women because it isn't necessarily, you know, just women, but anyone who is functioning as that asset in their lives, when you use some of those self-care practices, which include setting really clear boundaries and sticking to them, that must set an incredible example for others around you. You really begin to embody a leadership position and show people what that could look like to move through. Think of the situation we're in right now with COVID, to move through a situation that's as difficult as this and make those decisive decisions about where boundaries need to be and why in order to support yourself. You're really modeling how to move through adversity in a way that keeps you stable and keeps you doing well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You've done some work in the realm of leadership and boundaries. And I'm curious about how you've seen that play out within teams. And I use the word teams very broadly here. It could be in a workplace setting. We've got a lot of, you know, additional complexity that might be new for people as they work from home. And so those team dynamics might be in flux. So this is interesting to think about how it sets sort of a cultural standard or an environmental standard for that team, but also within your family, how that family unit functions. What does that look like when you have good boundaries in place? What does that feel like? And how is that different than if you don't, take that time and intentional work to set compassionate boundaries?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, let me just start off with sharing what I've been observing. So I work with a lot of leaders, people that identify, you know, in all different sorts of ways, men, women, LGBTQ, and everyone is navigating this new norm in such different ways. And we're about like 4 months in, you know, and I feel like there is this more adaptation that's happening. But as you said at the beginning, we are navigating so much change all the time that there's just constant shifts. And I don't think that any of the leaders or managers that I'm working with have really kind of found their ground, because it is literally shifting underneath their feet moment to moment, day by day. And so what that is creating for the manager of that team or the leader is a lot of emotional burden, actually, that they're having to care for their team. And there is a lot more needing to stay connected to the team, checking in not only on the professional objectives anymore, but the personal, like, how are you doing? Do you have what you need to really thrive in this environment? That personal care, which I think was really lacking in the workplace, is now something that we're having to do and really prioritize more, because it is about the team. We're not seeing these people in person. We're really connecting virtually all over the world more and more and more. And so that's requiring really asking people more directly, you know, having more transparency. And the piece that's really challenging around holding good boundaries is that we're all working from home. And so we don't have the separation between work and home for those people that were going into an office, where they could have a boundary around, you know, their two-year-old being around the house while they were working. Now there's, you know, notoriously, there've been all these videos on YouTube and whatnot of like the three-year-old that's crying in the midst of a big meeting and is in the background. And in fact, you know, I've had multiple calls with various coaching clients of mine where they'll say, Carly, my three-year-old is in the middle of lunch right now, and I actually need to have her in the room with me because my wife is on another call. And so that's kind of a new part of normalcy. And so we are really bringing our whole self to work right now. And we are trying to figure out, what are the boundaries? How can I delegate more? How can I actually have my team lead without authority so that we can all take care of each other? And just because I have the title of manager or leader doesn't mean I have to take care of everyone and be the sole person that's checking in, because it's too much on the managers and the leaders. And then they're also having to navigate, you know, their own family and how they lead in that environment. And so what I've been noticing is a real lack of self-care, actually, because they're on all the time, and on all the time, but also then on Zoom or on their technology all the time. So some of the things that I've been encouraging with my clients is really not going to every meeting, really having an agenda for every meeting that they have at work to make sure that it's essential that they're there. Otherwise, it's too much time on Zoom. To also give some permission to have the video off, or to, for example, go for a walk and dial in, you know, and have the call while you're in your body and you're getting some exercise. It's not healthy for us to be on our screens this much. We need to set boundaries around when we're on and when we're off. And we already needed to do that before the pandemic, you know, the on or off switch being I'm on my technology or I'm available to work. Now I'm not. And we're having to do that even more. And I also think it's about really checking in with everyone in our household to figure out, what do they need and what do I need, and how do we support each other to get our needs met so that we can create these healthy boundaries. So that was kind of a mouthful right there, but that's some of the things that I'm noticing and that I'm seeing people start to implement.
Mm-hmm. One of the pieces that I love most about that is how intentional it is, because so many times Ashley and I did an episode on boundaries a little while back as well. And one thing that we talked about there is we can believe that, or tend to believe that other people just know where our boundaries are, or they just know that they're overstepping, or they just know that we're at that breaking point where we need a break. And people just don't. I mean, we're all kind of in our own stuff. We've got our heads down. We don't realize when we're bumping into somebody else's a boundary point. We don't realize when we're overstepping. And what that intentional conversation can do, especially during times like this, is it sets up the right expectations so that people are aware. I mean, most people have good intentions. Most people want to do the right thing. They just don't realize that they might be overstepping. So I love how intentional that conversation is in being really upfront about the people who you are interacting closely with during this time and making sure that everyone is supporting each other. It's a sort of tit for tat kind of, hey, this is what I need, and I'll get you what you need if you can get me what I need. Like, everybody's sort of supporting each other, which is the situation we're in right now, right? We're all in this weird situation together, and it's going to require a little bit of teamwork in that way.
Totally. And, you know, I think also one of the reasons that we don't share what we need is because we have to feel first, because every feeling has a need. So, like, for example, if I'm feeling anger, that means a boundary has been crossed. There's some no, there's some ouch, there's this doesn't work for me. And if we're going so fast and we're not allowing ourselves to feel, this comes back to the beginning of the conversation, we're not going to be able to understand what our need is. And then it's going to be harder for us to articulate it. And because a lot of us are feeling overwhelmed, we're kind of just moving from one thing to the next without slowing down enough to recognize, wait a minute, I just got into this like adaptive coping mechanism that's actually not healthy. It's not working for me. And I actually need to state what it is that I really need. And sometimes when we express what we really need, and we all have had experiences, sometimes people don't like hearing what we need, right? They don't like hearing our feelings and needs. It's not always encouraged. It's not always well received. And so we all have this fear of, if I say something that this person doesn't like or love, they're going to reject me, they're going to leave me, they're going to abandon me, I'm going to lose my job, whatever that is. And that taps into, again, our survival response of knowing that I need to be part of this tribe to survive, because that goes way back to our hunter-gatherers. And so we're talking about how healthy it is to practice and set compassionate boundaries, but it's not always easy. So I want to just like acknowledge that, and to hopefully, before we end, give people some just tactile steps of how they can do that.
Yeah, I would love to go there next. Right before we do, though, one thing I want to encourage people to Google. We talk a lot about acceptance and commitment therapy and as just a method for moving forward, even when things get difficult, right? It involves figuring out what your values are, figuring out ultimately what is the goal, what is the thing you desire, what's the thing you need, right? Like, what are we pointing toward? And there are some tools within the acceptance and commitment therapy modality that I would encourage people, if you have a chance after this, Google ACT Matrix, A-C-T, so acceptance and commitment therapy matrix. And it's a nice tool to use to just uncover the yuck that you're going to have to go through in order to get to that thing that you need. And I just want to, we won't go into depth with that right now, but I would encourage people, Google that, because it's a really powerful tool that is very related to something that we've spoken about quite a bit on the podcast. So let's go into that, some practical ways that people can do this as we're wrapping this episode up. Like, how do people go forward and really take action when it is really difficult? Because I agree, like, oh man, it can be really hard.
Yeah. Well, I have an article that I wrote on this title, or on this topic rather, a couple years ago. If you go to Mindful Magazine, and you could just Google Carly Houck, or you could also just type in how to say no with heart. So this will kind of flesh it out a little bit more. And I give an example of a employee that I was working with and how I supported her to really create a compassionate boundary with her boss, who was being quite volatile. And I want to just kind of share with you some of the steps that I speak to in that article, but that you can really apply to your life. The first thing is to recognize, you know, where is my no? Where is my no? And to really give yourself permission to say no. And notice the feelings that might come up about even saying no. Like, oh my gosh, maybe someone's not going to like my no, right? Or I really want to be able to say yes because I want to help this person, but I can't, you know, whatever the feelings are around saying no. So first identify where you need to say no, and then have compassion for the feelings that might come up around the no. Also recognize, you know, where do you feel in your body this no? Because it all comes back to the body. We want to really be able to feel it so that we can release it and come back into balance. And then notice, what are my needs around this feeling? You know, what needs to be protected? What needs to be restored? Those are some good questions that can help you ascertain what the needs are. And then, acknowledge, like, what is that compassionate boundary? How can you share what you need that's kind and caring to yourself, and that's actually going to be kind and caring to the other? And then when you think about actually speaking to this other person and setting your boundary, this is all about, like, how do you invite a feedback conversation? And the first thing is you want to actually invite the conversation first. You don't want to just kind of, you know, see them or text them and then just blurt it out, because the fact is everyone is dealing with so many things right now that unless you're actually seeing them in person and you're able to check in and kind of feel, are they overwhelmed? How are they doing? We don't know actually if they're even in a place that they can receive your request. So what's always a good thing is to say, hey, there's something important I'd like to talk to you about. It's only going to take a couple minutes. Can we set up a time to talk? And then that, you know, plants the seed, and then that person is actually going to be available and present for that conversation. And then when you actually have the conversation, you always want to start with the good, because you want to basically, you know, create more peace. You want to create more safety. Hey, I've really appreciated that, 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 or I love how you show up, that, that, that. And then you can go into what you're requesting. It just creates more safety. And all of us want to feel a little bit more safe with each other right now, because again, we're navigating so much. Then you want to be really direct and specific around what you're asking for. And also you want to lead with compassion and say, you know, I imagine that you're having a lot of feelings, or you're navigating a lot as well, but this is what I'm really wanting. You know, what do you think? And you could also give that person an opportunity to take some time to digest what you've just asked. Like, they don't have to give you a yes or no right then. You could say, this is what I'm really wanting. Take your time to think about it. And then I'd like to circle back in a day or two, you know, or later this evening. Like, you can kind of feel into how much time they might want to process your request. Those are just kind of the highlights, but that is what I would share around setting a compassionate boundary.
That's such an actionable set of steps to take. And sometimes when you break things down like that, it makes them so much less intimidating to tackle when you just have to do one thing at a time. As we're wrapping up, I would love for you to talk a bit about, or just give me your definition of psychological strength. What does it mean to you to be psychologically strong?
When I think of psychological, you know, I think more of the mind, but I actually think to be psychologically strong, we have to bring in the whole body. So it's the mind, it's the body, it's the heart. And we're really being required to bring our whole self forward. And the more that we can access, you know, the wisdom of our body, the wisdom of our heart, and we really cultivate these tools on the inside. I use the word inner game a lot. You know, we have this inner game of emotional intelligence, awareness, self-compassion, resilience. This creates psychological strength, where we can really show up and navigate all the complexities on the outside with more grace, with more confidence, with more strength, because we have those resources and tools that we're developing on the inside.
I love it. If people want to find out more about you and the work that you do, where can we find you online?
So my website is just my first and last name, carlyhauck.com. I also have a newsletter and podcast on leading consciously at work and in the world, and that comes out bi-weekly. And you can sign up for that at leadfromlight.com. And I also feel really excited that I have a book. It'll be my first book that is coming out the end of February 2021. And I've been writing it for 3 years. And it's on how we cultivate this conscious inner game so that we can lead consciously at work and in the world and really support business to be a platform for positive change that prioritizes people and planet and creates a workplace and a world that works for everyone. So if you're interested in that topic, we'd love to have you sign up for the newsletter. And that's a big part of what I talked about in the podcast as well.
That's an amazing mission. We spend so much of our time in our jobs and devoted to our careers that it is an incredible place to start to make such an impactful change on the world. Carly, this has been so great. It has been so wonderful to chat with you. You have such an empathetic way of understanding the situation that everyone is in right now, the pressures that are on them, and how emotionally complex we might be feeling in this time. And from that place, figuring out how to move forward in a way that supports us. So I appreciate you so much. And thank you so much for taking some time today to be with us on this episode.
Well, thank you so much, April. This was delightful. I love talking about all these things and just really loved how you hosted the interview and the flow. Thank you again.
Tell me if this sounds like you. I'll finally be happy. I'll finally take a breath. I'll finally find some balance when I get through this crazy season of life. We hear that from so many people, and the fact is, many times, life is just a crazy season. All of it. Between your career, your family, your community obligations, attempting to have a social life, and trying to fit in self-care, whatever that is, we end up feeling stretched so thin. Now, I want to challenge you to think about things differently. Rather than focusing on external circumstances and their impact on your happiness, your sense of ease and balance, and your mental well-being, what if instead you focused on something you can actually control? What if you built the psychological strength that would allow you to thrive through life when things are going well and even when they're not? What if you could feel less scattered, more in control, less anxious, more peaceful and joyful? We want that for you too. That's why we are so beyond excited to announce the beta release of our signature psych strength building program, Ascend. This program combines evidence-based tools, techniques, and information from the fields of psychology and life design to focus on three important modules: you, your mind, and your life. Learn your unique combination of strengths, values, and identity, and the ways in which they interact and lead you to approach life in your unique way. Dig into your mind to understand the conscious and subconscious processes that act as a lens through which you experience life. And finally, harness the power of life design to begin to steer your life into alignment with who you uniquely are. Enrollment in this beta round of Ascend is open now, and because it's our beta round, the price is astonishingly low. So if you have ever had even a suspicion that you could benefit from building psychological strength through a guided, science-backed experience, now is the time. Visit www.peakmindpsychology.com/ascend for more information and to join us. Friends, it is time to build psychological strength. It's time to live by design and not by default. It is time to live like your life depends on it, because it does. Join us in Ascend by visiting www.peakmindpsychology.com/ascend. That's www.peakmindpsychology.com/ascend. It's a simple fact that nearly everyone in the world could benefit from building psychological strength, but not everyone will put in the time and effort to do so, but today you did. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Building Psychological Strength. Now, if you're interested in building the mental toughness, confidence, and resilience you need to thrive through life's ups and downs, visit us at www.peakmindpsychology.com. Also, if there's someone in your life who could benefit from this episode, please share it with them. And if you yourself found this episode valuable, meaning if you took away even one insight that you can use to build psychological strength in your own life, we would so appreciate it if you would drop us a rating and a review on iTunes. The thing is, the more ratings and reviews we have, the easier it is to get this powerful and important content out to the people who need to hear it. Remember, your mind can be your most valuable asset or your biggest liability, and you get to choose. So choose wisely, my friend, and I'll see you next time on Building Psychological Strength.
Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.